Call to order the Senate Jobs and Economic Growth Committee. We've got four bills on the schedule today. A quorum is present. I'm going to ask Senator Daley if he'd lead off today. I have no doubt, and I am fine putting it on the record, that Senator Senjum will be late. It's just absolutely predictable. So Senator Daley will take the lead with his bill, which is a continuation of our discussion last week. Mr. Rakowski, are you with us? Why don't you come up to the table as well? And members, if you recall, this was the window washer issue and legislation, and we had, I would describe it as some last-minute back and forth, and we were advised that it was not ready for prime time last week. I am advised that it is ready for prime time, that there is peace in the valley. But I want to put that on the record, and I want to hear it directly from Mr. Rakowski. But let me go to the author first. Senator Daley, any kind of summary or conclusion that you want to share with us this morning?
Mr. Chairman, members, I would just say that we have the A4 amendment that I'd like to introduce and move that.
All right, Senator Daley, let me make sure everyone has the A4. Members, do you have the A4 in your packets?
Good to you. Yes, we do.
You got it, Senator Metzen. Okay. So, Senator Daley or counsel, I'll look to either. Could you describe the amendment and what it does from our discussion of last week? Senate counsel.
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment changes the language to on line 3.10 after where any. It says on only on those areas that are undergoing reconstruction, alteration, or repair. And so that's only where the reconstruction is only on the certain areas that are undergoing reconstruction, alteration, or repair. And then also includes language that allows the commissioner to waive a portion of the requirements under this paragraph. So it allows the commissioner to, you can, someone who is doing repair or construction can apply to the commissioner to get a waiver for these requirements. And so it's at the discretion of the commissioner to determine whether or not the dedicated anchorages would result in safety improvements or the cost outweighs the benefits.
Okay, so that's a little general description of the A4. Senator Daley, anything that you would add on the language of the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, nothing in particular, just that this is language that both sides have agreed to. There's concurrence, peace in the valley, as it were.
Thank you, Senator Daley. Mr. Rakowski, can you at least confirm the work that's been done on this? And
thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's always a pleasure to be in front of the Jobs Committee. This language was actually worked out between the folks who own the buildings and the people who hang over the roofs, the window washers, and the department. As long as those parties are satisfied, we're completely satisfied with this waiver language as well. So is the commissioner.
All right, members. So Senator Daley moves the A4 to Senate File 1964. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed nay. Motion's adopted. So we've adopted the A4.
Move the bill.
Yeah. Senator Daley, any concluding comments? Let me also ask, is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify today on Senate File 1964? I'm going to take that as a no. Senator Daley, any concluding comments?
Thank you to everyone that helped bring this to this point, to achieve this bipartisan agreement, and thank you to the Senate authors, again, bipartisan support, and I think this will move through If there are there any other committees that this has to go through, or will this go to the Senate floor?
I'm told it will go to the floor, Senator Daley.
And I look forward to a very bipartisan vote on the Senate floor and send it to Governor Dayton.
So, members, I do want to note, thank you, Senator Daley, that there is a letter in your packet from the SEIU in support of the bill. Again, in support of 1964. And I assume that's as amended, given the work over the last week. So you have that. Very good. So, Senator Daley, this will go to the floor. Senator Daley moves that we recommend approval for Senate File 1964 as amended, and that be referred to the Senate floor. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion's adopted. Thank you, Senator Daley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank
members.
You, Mr. Rakowski.
Thank you.
Mr. Rakowski, while you're there, can you come back for one question on this same topic? Is this bill moving separately in the House, or is it on its own, or is it part of a larger package?
Mr. Chairman, it is moving on its own. It was in the House Commerce Committee where the vote was affirmative and unanimous as well. So I'm going to assume it doesn't have to go to the Finance Committee. It would go right to the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Rakowski.
Thank you.
Senator DeKreif,
are you ready to take it here?
Yes, sir. Members will now move to Senate File 1551. Is it? Do people have it? Senator DeKreif, on Senate File 1551, I understand there's an amendment, but is there any kind of originating comments you want to make on this legislation, and then we can get into some of the details? And members, this bill will be referred from here to the Finance Committee. Senator DeKreif.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, Committee. What Senate File 1551 does is it essentially, in case of a state shutdown, would allow electrical inspectors to still do their work throughout Minnesota. It seems that this is it could be a very imperative safety issue in some cases, and it certainly is something that in some cases I got calls from some electrical inspectors that there were carnivals coming to their area. And without being able to inspect these carnivals, they might not have been able to open. And quite frankly, these are not state funds that fund the electrical inspectors. They're funds that come into a pot of money from permit fees. So these are paid for from others than state coffers, if you will, general fund dollars. So what this bill is essentially intended to do is just allow them to continue their work. I do have an amendment. It's an A1 amendment.
All right, Senator DeKreif. Members, you should have the A1. Again, I'm going to look around the table just to make sure people have the language, the A1 amendment to Senate File 1551. Senator DeKreif, to the A1.
I'd like to move the A1 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Do you want to just give a brief overview of it, Senator DeKreif, so we have that for the record?
Yes, sir. What it essentially does, it takes electrical inspections, and they should be continued regardless of whether any or all of the biennial appropriation law for the department has been enacted. So essentially what it does is it really just cleans up the language that was in the original bill, and it does it in a way that just essentially says that the government will take care of the paying of these people. In any other branches of government that have to do something in order to make sure this money is paid to the inspectors, will continue to operate.
All right. So Senator DeKreif moves the A1 to get this bill in the shape that he wants it. All in favor of the A1, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The A1 is adopted. Senator DeKreif, I understand we have at least one testifier, and there's also some support letters in our packet. Senator DeKreif, do you want to highlight the the support letters. And then, Mr. Straczynski, do you want to join us at the table, please? Senator DeCryf, to the supporters who are here in writing as opposed to body.
Well, essentially, Mr. Chair, what the support letters are talking about is, you know, homeowner and business electrical systems are knocked out due to storm damage. You know, sometimes they're not able to be re-energized until they're inspected. So there's certain situations essentially that these inspectors and electricians are talking about, that they need these services to be going on for safety issues, or people could actually be dislocated from their homes because their service would not be able to be turned on. So that's essentially what they're talking about, is that it's essential that we keep these people working.
All right, Mr. Straczynski, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Bill Straczynski, and I'm representing the Minnesota Electrical Association, about 400 rural electrical contractors primarily, today testifying in support of this legislation. We thank the Senator for bringing this bill forward. It's extremely important from our perspective. I should also say that the National Association of Electrical Contractors, or NECA contractors, also support this legislation. Basically, the letters do a good job of explaining what the problem has been. You have a letter from the Contract Inspectors Association. That's all the inspectors who do this particular work. We were very concerned last time during a shutdown, and I was engaged in lots of conversations about what to do, because it is absolutely critical for people to get their homes inspected. They paid a permit. They paid a fee. We had contractors working throughout the state, and that all basically stopped because there were no inspections occurring. So, and I can tell you that there were 20 carnivals that actually opened up and did their county fairs in Minnesota that were not inspected. And that's a real life safety issue from us. This bill really goes to the heart of public safety. Life safety matters. Electricity is not something to be messed with. And there were truly a lot of homes that were damaged in storms, tornadoes, high winds. We couldn't even turn the power back on, even though XL Energy, and we'd done all the work, but we couldn't get the permit to turn the power back on. There were lots and lots of examples of that, not just the normal disruption of commerce when you have to shut down a job and do something else with your crew for a period of time because we couldn't get the inspections done so we could close in walls and what have you. But we support the bill, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and I stand for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Straczynski. I wonder if Mr. Jensen could highlight the fiscal note on this. It was not apparent on its face why there would necessarily be a fiscal impact on this. But, Mr. Jensen, can you speak to the fiscal note on Senate File 1551 for us?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, members, the fiscal note came in on the original bill, and that's quite a different bill than what you have in the A1 amendment. The A1 amendment keeps the electrical inspections going forward. We'll ask for a new fiscal note before it gets to the Finance Committee.
So, Mr. Jensen, maybe just an opinion then. Have we taken care of the need for a fiscal note given the new language adopted? Do we still need to go to Finance?
Mr. Chairman, there would be a new general fund appropriation in case of a shutdown to pay for the services provided by the inspectors. And that would require a new fiscal note. The old fiscal note, again, was quite a different purpose.
And Senator DeCryf, I don't know if you were anticipating the fiscal note. Of course, we usually get them about within hours of the committee.
Well,
I think this one came last night. But
yeah, Senator Michelle, I guess I will defer to Mr. Jensen on that. It seems to me that this money is basically coming into the state coffers or into this fund, you know, by permits and it's self-funding. I guess I've learned in my short tenure here at the state capitol that fiscal notes sometimes come from unusual sources. So
sure.
I will defer to Mr. Jensen.
Mr. Senator Chairman, if I might have a comment, I can.
Hang on a second, sure. Mr. Straczynski. Sir, how is it to this point?
No.
Mr. Straczynski, and then I got a couple other members, too.
I just, Mr. Chairman, how it basically works is certainly everybody pays for the permit fee. So the state collects all of these revenues from homeowners and businesses for the inspection. However, the legislature has to appropriate the money back out. You do every year biennial budgets. You have to appropriate that money back to the agency for those purposes. In the past, you've actually taken money away from that inspection account. I think that's the purpose of this language, just to say that there will be money made available, even though the money needs to be appropriated. I mean, I think that's basically what you're dealing with. Because dedicated funds certainly are appropriated back out to the agencies for use.
Senator Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering on this bill. I mean, there's other entities that are self-funded that that experienced some difficulties during the shutdown, and I'm just wondering if there's a way to put all these together in one instead of doing this on a piecemeal basis. That was just my only question. Comment.
Chairman. Not in response, and I'll go to Senator Metz next, but as I understand it, Senator Howe, that there are a number of bills that speak to shutdown contingencies, and they're all heading to finance. So that could be the place where they are consolidated, debated, and that strikes me that's the right place to do it. So it sounds like that's happening.
Okay, good.
Senator Metzen.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, it strikes me that if we elected officials don't get our job done, then we can cherry pick and exempt plumbers, electricians, racetrack, the zoo, and the list could go on and on. I think it's kind of a slippery slope to go down. I don't know if that's how we should govern around here. I mean, you've already got exemptions. I've heard bills like the racetrack, the zoo. Plumbers are probably almost as important as important as electricians, like Senator House said. So I think we could list about 90% of the things that are exempt if we don't do our job, if you want to just keep going down the list. So I just am afraid we're trying to get ourselves out of a little bind. If we don't get our work done here, we could go home and say, well, yeah, but we've made all these exemptions for everybody else. So I just don't think that's the way to govern. But
slippery slope, Senator Metz.
Yeah, I just think you could you could carry this thing on to extremes and just do about 90% of the work we do around here. So I think it's the wrong way to go.
Senator Kielash.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, could we get someone from DEDA? One of the things I'd like is a better understanding of how this fund is managed and whether this is going to affect how the normal, funding and functions of that fund are.
Senator Kielash, I think you need to hear from Labor and Industry.
Labor and Industry on that, since they're not here.
And I'm not. I don't know if okay. Mr. Rakowski or someone else can speak to this particular
I wasn't
fund.
Sure if anybody was here on that. But.
Looks like. Good morning.
Good morning.
Could you give us your identify for the tape your name and see if you can tackle Senator Kielash's question?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. My name is Jessica Loom, and I'm Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Labor and Industry, and I oversee the Construction Codes and Licensing Division, of which the Electrical Inspection Program is a portion. To address your question, Senator Kielash, Mr. Straczynski is correct in that the way that the Electrical Inspection Program itself is funded is through permit fees that are applied for through the department, and then we have a contract electrical inspection model at the department. So, again, the DLI funds in the Construction Codes and Licensing Division are a fee-for-service model, and the fees in from permits pay for the inspection services.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up, are the electrical inspection fees set aside from all other permit fees? Are they so that we're just the electric, it's paying only for the electric, we're not taking money from a different permitting fee to pay for the inspections, et cetera? Just making sure we're not cross.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kielash, the Construction Codes and Licensing Fund, the CCLD fund, is one fund. There aren't separate pots, if you will, and buckets in that fund. So all the money goes into that fund, and then the services that are required to provide under statute are then paid for out of that fund.
I've got Senator Nelson.
I'll pass.
Senator Tomasoni.
And Mr. Chairman, thank you.
when in the event of a government shutdown, is anybody working to push the button on the computer?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomassoni,
no.
I don't know. I'm sorry.
Senator Tomassoni, I think that gets into the essential, non-essential legal definition and interpretation.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's kind of the crux of this, is that while the money is there and we're not going to stop the inspections because the money is there, how does the money get paid if nobody is actually manning the computer terminals and sending it out? So I'm thinking that we may have a catch-22 situation.
Senator Tomassoni, we may have a Senate Council response that could be helpful for you.
Mr. Chair and members, and Senator Tomassoni, this language was worked out with the fiscal people in our office, and it's been used on a couple of other bills, as mentioned earlier. And on there is kind of a mechanism or a sentence in here that allows the commissioner to transfer, the commissioner of management and budget, to transfer some portion of the appropriation to other state agencies to carry out any support function. So it kind of tries to also allow for people to push buttons or to do whatever is necessary to allow funds to be dispersed or for other functions to be carried out to allow the electrical inspections to continue. So it was kind of drafted to actually allow
Chairman,
of these back office functions.
Ms. Doyle Fontaine, what if nobody's working?
Well, Mr. Chair and members and Senator Tomassoni, I believe the intent was to at least have, you know, the people that are working to allow some of these functions that were considered essential, even though that language isn't contained here, some of the functions to continue, and that this language would allow that money to be appropriated for some back office functions.
Senator DeCraeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, to me, what this bill talks about is, and this specifically about the electrical inspectors, speaks to safety. And I think personal safety is something that we should be looking at. I believe that there was actually a suit that was being brought forward to the judges. The shutdown ended before that actually happened. I actually happen to personally believe that the judges would have seen that this is something that would have gone forward. But I can't say that for sure. But I think that they would agree that this is a safety issue.
Thank you, Senator DeCraeff. Other discussion? Is there anyone else here to testify on Senate File 1551? So let's see. Did we adopt the amendment? We did adopt the amendment. So this bill needs to go to Finance, where I think it'll be part of a larger discussion, as alluded to by Senator Metzen. So, Senator DeCraeff moves that Senate File 1551, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay.
No.
Nay.
Motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator DeCraeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee.
Let's see. Members, we now have the junior senator from Rochester with us. Senator Senjum.
I was going to say, I always like to be called junior. He's got a nice ring to it.
Senator Senjum, thank you for joining the committee this morning. You have Senate File 1421. Any opening comments, Senator Senjum? Welcome to the Jobs Committee.
Thank you, Senator Michelle and members. And truer words never spoken with respect to the junior senator. I know where my place is. Members, the bill before you today, Senate File 1421, is a bill known as, at least by this title, Performance Rewards on Fast Investment Today, which is the acronym being PROFIT. It's an interesting bill, I think, in the sense that it follows, to some extent, the themes, generally speaking, of the old Job Z program with some different twists on it, which I I think are interesting and I hope attractive to the committee. The bill is obviously presented with the overall general theme of job growth in Minnesota. And basically what it would do is provide tax abatement to companies looking to expand and put Minnesota to work in the areas specifically of manufacturing, warehousing, information technology, distribution, finance, insurance, or professional or technical services business would also qualify for this. Now, basically what it does is in exchange for receiving a refund on property sales and motor vehicle taxes paid in order to operate a profit business. And by the way, you do submit an application to deed and also to your local units of government applying to be a profit business. But then in exchange for that, you would get refunds in each of those areas, again, profit sales and motor vehicle taxes. The company must create at least 10 full-time jobs to be a profit business. In the metro area, those jobs must pay at least a minimum of $35,000 a year. In rural Minnesota, $27,000 a year. The business must invest at least $500,000 in construction projects to include new expanded or a remodeled facility within 2 years of signing a profit agreement. So there is that that investment. And again, the agreement would take place between the company and the local government, be it school board government, be it city government, or be it county government, so that all units of government in a local community are involved in this from the standpoint of whether it's a good idea. If the profit business is adopted and goes forward, it could go on for a maximum of 12 years. My understanding is that could be that would be per agreement with the local units of government. If, for instance, a company would fail with respect to their employment goals, there would be an adjustment in the tax refunds according to that lesser amount in terms of not meeting the complete goals. As, for instance, if 30% fewer jobs were created, if 7 jobs were created instead of 10, the tax benefits then would be backed off by 30%. The bill doesn't pick winners and losers from the standpoint of location. Job Z was largely a greater Minnesota bill. This could apply anywhere in metropolitan Minnesota, greater Minnesota, and so on. So in that sense, I think it's more equal than the old Job Z program. Obviously, Mr. Chair and members, what we're trying to do here is provide ideas that will incent businesses to take steps to grow and invest in Minnesota. This idea of being a profit business, I think, is maybe one more entry on the menu that might entice and encourage people to make steps. Obviously, not without investment, $500,000, certainly from the standpoint of a capital investment at least, and thereafter at least 10 full-time employees making at least $35,000 a year. So that's the overall sense of the bill, Mr. Chairman and members, and I would refer to my good friend Louis Jamboy of the St. Paul Port Authority, and he may have some additional comments or clarifications.
Thank you, Senator Senjum. Mr. Jamboy, welcome to the committee. You just give your name and rank and serial number for the record.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Louis Jamboy. I'm the president of the St. Paul Port Authority. I have been in the business and community development game for upwards of 35 years at a variety of different places. Including deed, I haven't been here for a while, so forgive me if I make a mistake or two along the way. But I'm here to testify in support of this bill. The St. Paul Port Authority is the City of St. Paul's primary industrial redevelopment agency, and as such, we have really utilized every conceivable federal, state, regional economic development tool out there to stimulate job creation and capital investment in the City of St. Paul and the East Metro area. So our experience with economic development tools is extensive. When we looked at this particular bill, we liked it for a variety of reasons. First, it's a statewide program, which means everyone has an opportunity to participate. Secondly, it's really targeted at capital investment and job creation, which is consistent with a lot of economic development tools. So it is a tried and true performance measure. What we're really after in the state, of course, is capital investment and job creation, and this particular bill and program would do both of those things. There are thresholds for both activities, which again is appropriate. They're achievable thresholds, but they do hold businesses and communities to a standard that we should all be held to. It's a simple program. It's simpler than many programs, which means it'll be easier for entry from both a business and a community perspective. It'll be an easy program, I think, for the state of Minnesota at deed to administer. It's got a project-specific application, which means a specific business has to come forward, put together a business plan, put together a business project, and then deed, with its experience, gets to review those applications and determine whether it is a solid project. There's a formal review up front with very, very good criteria that we've all seen before, that deed has applied before on business deals. So again it's a very familiar drill for folks to go through, and we know that when this kind of a level of analysis is applied, we know, you know, if the project's going to work or not. So again, this is a pretty decent setup. There's a good eligible business listing. Upon implementation, there will be 1,000 questions about exactly how a business works under one of those four or five categories or not. So that, I think, is where any implementation challenge will probably occur, is which businesses under these categories apply and which don't. But again, I've got confidence in my old friends at Deed that they'll be able to do that. The simple wage requirements are very straightforward. The building requirements are very straightforward. The criteria is straightforward with some flexibility. The part of this bill that is, I think, the most workable from an accountability and an administration standpoint is that this program requires performance prior to the payment. And if in fact the performance is okay but doesn't quite measure up to what was originally agreed to, then the payment is prorated back. So Deed will be able to administer this bill again, I think, very easily. It's a simple program. It's calculable. It's controllable. The size of the tax credits are reasonable, and we think it will actually result in job creation and tax-based stimulation, which again is what local economic development authorities like the St. Paul Port Authority do. So this would be a wonderful program to add to our toolbox at the local level, and we enjoy our partnership with the state of Minnesota, with Deed. We think this program would work. And if I didn't mention it before, I mention it one more time. We're really happy at the St. Paul Port Authority that this is a statewide program. So that's it for me, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, can I just mention one point that I neglected to, and that is that under the provisions of the bill, you know, we all worry about, and I would worry about too if I was sitting at this table, about communities, if you will, robbing businesses from another community under the auspices of being a profit business. That's prohibited under the bill. There are also provisions in here about, if a business has a business in one part of the state, they can't transfer employees just to keep that employee base up to 10. So there's safeguard provisions in the bill that get at concerns that you might have about one community taking from another.
Thank you, Senator Sundrum. I have Senator Howe and then Senator Metzen. I wonder if I could also ask now, Mr. Loftus, could you join us at the table here to get your perspective on this bill? I know you've been involved. Senator Howe first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've just got a couple of concerns. I'm just concerned about the competitiveness of existing businesses. And one of the concerns I have is under distribution, and I also serve on the Transportation Committee, and I'm looking here under distribution services. And then when I look at subsection 7 here, motor vehicle tax refund, I'm just wondering if somebody's in the business of hauling, distributing, we're going to refund back the purchase of their vehicles, and it doesn't say that the vehicle needs to be purchased in Minnesota, so it could be an out-of-state purchase. And then also applies to any local sales and use tax. And it doesn't appear that there's any ceilings or any maximums in there, and I'm just wondering how that would affect some of our current businesses that are in the distribution process. It looks like, pardon the phrase, something you could drive a truck through.
Oh. Or several.
You need a new radar.
Take a shot. Mr. Loftus, you going to take a shot at that?
Mr. Chairman, I will. I'm Mark Loftus. I'm with DEED. And for the record, I should also say that, as you probably know, this is not a governor's initiative. So I'm not here to speak in favor of the bill or opposed to it, but to try to answer some technical questions.
Mr. Loftus, do you like the bill?
We'll be happy to implement the bill as provided to us to pass.
That's a very, very good. So Mr. Loftus, again, to Senator Howe's question.
Senator Howe, I think the second part of your question was about the sales tax, the cap on the in the program. As I understand it, there is no cap, but the cap is a or the sales tax exemption is there to provide incentive for people to make equipment investments to construct buildings in order to make those additions to their job creation opportunities. So that in fact there isn't, as written, there isn't a sales tax exemption, and I think the authors probably have that in there for the purpose of trying to support more investment.
Senator Howe.
Mr. Chair, but it doesn't say that it's going to help Minnesota purchases. I mean, there's no limitation on where that purchase is made. And I guess a bigger question is when you come to local sales tax and use tax, that could be very significant to the way we fund our transportation system.
Mr. Loftus.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Howe, that may be a question for the Department of Revenue about how sales tax, the incidence of sales tax, where it is generated from. I'm not an expert on how taxes are collected.
That's fair, Mr. Loftus. So, Senator Howe, this is going to taxes next, so you'll have another shot at this. But I don't mean to cut off any more.
No, I'm just thinking that it probably needs to go to transportation, too, I would think. So just a thought.
But are you on transportation?
I'm on transportation, too. And
Vice
I'm on
Chairman.
Vice
Chairman. Senator Senjum, you're going to go through an obstacle course here. Senator Tomasoni.
Oh, I was next.
Metzen was next. Senator Metzen.
I've got to, first of all, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Majority Leader. I think you've got some good points here, and I think this is a good idea. And somebody mentioned tools in the toolbox, and I believe that these are more tools. But I'd like to hit on something else. I'd like to save you a committee. I'd like to save you to go to the Finance Committee. Mr. Jamboy, how many employees you used to work for DEED are in the work for DEED?
Work for DEED right now, Mr.
Approximately,
Chair?
Approximately, yeah.
Chair Senator Metzen, I don't know, around 1,200 perhaps, Mark.
Okay, how many employees, I don't know, is it in the room, work for revenue?
Don't know that question, Mr. Chair, Senator.
1,000, 1,500, 2,000? My point is, I think we can do this, Senator Senjum, without adding $150,000 more for employees. It seems to me that there's probably 2,500 employees, more or less, in the two departments. Take it out of your hide. I'm sure, I can't prove it, but I think I'm reasonably sure that this job can get done with the contingency we have, or the contingent we have in the workforce in those two departments. So.
Senator Sundrum, this is the Metzen rule. This is very consistent about this, that we've all got to learn to do a little bit more.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, it's a friendly suggestion. I don't know if Mr. Loftus had an initial response.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzen, we provide information on the fiscal note from Deed's perspective, and I think we said zero additional cost for Deed.
And Mr. Chairman, on Deed, it looks like two-thirds of an employee, what I get out of it. So Deed is not zeroed out, I don't think.
Well, Mr. Jensen, can you confirm, maybe Mr. Loftus doesn't have the latest version of that note, but what do we have before the committee as far as a fiscal note?
Mr. Chairman and members, the fiscal note shows that additional money goes to revenue. Deed is not asking for additional money. Mr. Chairman, if I might, if you go back to
the special session,
this committee cut Deed by about 10% each fiscal year, 12 and 13.
So it is just
first mistake I've made.
But Mr. Jensen, is revenue asking for more employees in order to fulfill the language of this bill?
Mr. Chairman, yes. They're asking for one more person in fiscal year 12. Three more people in fiscal year 13.
All right, so Senator Metzen, that I think you've just made your point. It's with the Department of Revenue, which is a little outside the jurisdiction of this committee, but I think your point is still pretty valid.
They usually are, Mr. Just kidding.
Usually, Senator Kreif.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Say, I might be applying for a job here. On page five of the fiscal note, 5 of 9, it says that this employee for one person for 12 months times $85 per hour equals $176,000. Does this sound like a reasonable request?
Senator, is there anyone from the Department of Revenue who could who would
are you qualified?
Give us a little more perspective on this fiscal note that's in front of the committee.
You need
I have dibs on this one.
So, Chair, is that the job that Senator Kreif was looking for?
It is. It is.
Mr. Cummins, thank you. I know you've been in and out of this committee
he's got three
before.
Or four. Yes.
And I know you're not always able to be fully responsive depending on the topic of the bill, but I think you've heard the discussion so far. What can you add? And please give your name and for the record.
Paul Cummings, legislative liaison for the Department of Revenue. Happy to be here today. I think you were talking. Yes. I know this is something that it relates to the system development as it relates to our integrated tax system. We have a integrated tax system that was developed 4 or 5 years ago, and we're continuing in the rollout. As we deal with trying to add new tax types or add new credits or add new functionalities in order to make sure that is fully functional as it relates to not only its ability to interact with other tax types, but also to interact with taxpayers. Systems development is a cost. And so I know $85 an hour in terms of system programming, I know that's a standard cost that is put on fiscal notes as it relates to updating our systems. And I can't tell you at this time what the cost would be in the private market for a system development for a computer program.
Senator Kreif.
Mr. Chair, I think I do want to see an application for this job because I can start analyzing a lot of systems, I think, for $85 an hour for a year's time. I think this looks unrealistic, and quite frankly, I think it should be. They should go back and relook at it.
I've got Senator Tomasoni and then Senator Torres-Ray. Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It sounds like Senator DeKreif is supporting Senator Metzen on his let the department do the job. Yes, yes. So, but I have one question of
Mr. Loftus about the subdivision 6 on page 5, and I was wondering if that sales and use tax refund is the same as we have in law right now for construction materials for, and is that the same thing, or is this an addition to it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomassoni, in current law, a manufacturer receives, in effect, a refund for equipment, used capital equipment used in the manufacturing process. They don't receive an exemption for construction materials. So this would be, for these projects, this would be an additional sales tax exemption if you build a building. And get
and Mr. Loftus, if I'm not mistaken, don't we have like a $50 million budget hole there because it's so complicated to apply for that exemption that people don't apply for it, and that when we tried to say instead of having a refund, let's just not charge them the tax up front, we've never been able to get it done because it's a fiscal note of over $50 million because people don't do it because it's so complicated. Isn't it something like that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomassoni, you'd need somebody from revenue to speak to the number that's involved there. I know there is questions about whether companies are receiving all that they're due.
And I know they're not. So, but what I'm getting at here is that if they're not doing it now, and we're going to make it even more complicated with adding more taxes and more ability to get refunds, I got a funny feeling we're going to hear businesses come in here and say, wow, was this ever complicated? How do you expect me to figure this out? I work every single day just trying to make a buck, and you guys want me to file all these forms for all these refunds. I just can't do it. I don't know how the business is going to like this thing. It's maybe a really good idea, Senator Senjum, but I'm worried that our business community is going to say, this is another complication coming from this. Can't you do it easier? Isn't there an easier way to do it? I don't know. I'm just wondering. Because I've been hearing businesses. I mean, I heard the guy come in here and complain about having to put a cage over a light switch and thought that that was very onerous. I have no idea what they're going to think of this.
Go ahead. Mr. Jamboy, it looks like you have a thought about how this might be received by those who would be impacted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Tomassoni, we're engaged at the Port Authority in building buildings on a pretty regular basis with business clients. Any additional activity for those business clients, of course, is something that if in a perfect world they would prefer not to do. But what's good about this particular bill is that if you've got a $5 million building, and we just had one here not terribly long ago, it is reasonably easy to calculate within that construction project what the taxes are going to be on the materials on that building. That makes it easier then for the business to calculate what it is that they're going to be actually receiving in an incentive. It makes it easier for Deed and the Department of Revenue to calculate what it's going to cost the state of Minnesota in terms of lost revenue. These two tax exemptions are much easier to calculate on both the business and the state end than, for instance, corporate franchise tax, which was one of the things that was identified in the previous program. So the short answer is yeah, these kinds of things will add an additional activity for the businesses to undertake. But again, if the incentive is significant, they usually step up to the plate and will do it. So we see this again as a net positive.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, I don't see the bill as being a bad bill. I see the bill as being a very complicated bill, and the fact that construction materials are already exempt for manufacturers and that they aren't applying for the rebates because of the complications of the forms or whatever it is, it seems to me we've got now four new applications. So I don't know if there's a way to simplify this bill to make it easier for businesses to actually get to what Senator Senjum is trying to do here. But I got a funny feeling we're going to hear all kinds of complaints, and we're going to find out that once we put this into effect, that businesses aren't applying for the refunds because they just found it too onerous and too complicated for them to do it. And the only reason I'm saying that is because of the experience that we've already had on the rebates on the sales taxes on construction equipment. So I'm just sending out a cautionary note here about what I think might end up happening.
I have Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for either of the testifiers. As I think about manufacturing and warehousing and distribution, which are listed in page 2, if I were a company that has business in those different areas, motor, property, and sales tax exemption, it's pretty significant. And so I would think about perhaps getting out of business and getting into a new company, for a profit company, in order to get those exemptions, because the overwhelming majority of the business that I conduct in warehousing and distribution are related to sales, property, and motor. So I think it would be to my advantage to recreate a company and become a profit company, a profit business, in order to get reimbursement on these three taxes, which are the bulk of the businesses that I do. Is am I reading these correctly? Because it is very significant. If I get tax exemption on the three most important aspects of my business, it just makes a lot of sense that I recreate my company, doesn't it?
Mr. Chair and Senator, the way I read and understand this bill is that it has an anti-relocation provision in it to prevent businesses from doing what you are suggesting. This bill, I believe, is intended for those that are expanding to expand in place. That's always the cheapest and the best way to go, if possible. If it's a new business, to create a business, the business has to go through all of the application criteria that is listed in this bill, go through all of the work that is required, find a site that works for them, and then apply for the refunds after they happen. So I don't. Given the process associated with this, given the anti sort of relocation activities that show up in the bill, I personally don't see a big issue with businesses just sort of picking up from one spot and going to another place.
Follow up,
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you. Could you point out to me the language that speaks directly to the prevention of relocation?
I'm trying to find it. Mark, do you have a date?
Yeah, we also have Senate Counsel with an answer for you there, Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, members, and Senator Torres Ray, I believe on page 3, line 3.4, are we talking about positions or employees?
Yes.
Moved or relocated from another location, they can't be included in the calculation or determination of new jobs created on lines 3.4 to 3.6. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Senator Kielash.
I have a couple questions, Mr. Chair. First, Mr. Lafness, one of the things that strikes me is that it seems to me that Deed's already doing a lot of this that's in the bill. Could you just go over this bill and just an overview of what you're already doing and which tools are already in your toolbox and which tools would actually be new to you in the negotiation process? Because it seems like there's a lot of duplication of what's already being done. But if you could just kind of give us the breakdown where they're different from what you're currently doing, I'd appreciate that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kielash, I'd say we have two primary tools today that have been around for a long time. One of them is the Minnesota Investment Fund. It's our primary incentive program to help companies that are looking to locate or expand in the state. That's one program. The other one is the Job Skills Partnership, which is an incredibly important program to help with customized training. Those are the two main programs that we bring to the table, the two tools that we employ. Currently, we also employ in Greater Minnesota the Job Z program. which is has declining number of years, as we know, to 2015. It ends at that point. And in terms of what we are not, let me go back to what we testified here before, is that we have, and Commissioner Phillips has spoken, I believe, also that we lack some significant tools for economic development. We're competing with other states. Other states have significant funds for incentives that we don't have. We do the best we can, and Minnesota has done pretty well, given the fact that we don't have some very large programs like other states do that we compete with. But in terms of what this does, this also, compared to the Jobs E program, this does, as Mr. Jamboy said, give us a tool in the metro area. It's a basically statewide applicability is something that we don't have today in our current toolbox.
Can I follow? The tax incentives Sorry, different Eli. Than what you're already currently able to offer, or? That's some of what I'm looking at. Is there new tax incentives here that you're not able to offer this time? Is there, the way of, the motor vehicle tax, et cetera. I don't know if that's all part of a package when you're working with a company, if you can put all this together currently, or if this is adding something really new to what you're currently able to negotiate with a company that's interested in expanding in Minnesota.
Mr. Loftus.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kielash, this is a new tool, especially in the sense of the metro area. Yes. In greater Minnesota, we can offer some tax benefits in the Jobs E program for the 3 or 3.5 years left of the program. In the Twin Cities, we essentially don't have a tool with tax exemptions at all. The obvious exceptions to that are the fact that tax increment financing is a tool that cities can use. We partner with cities and have with places like St. Paul on that. The other aspect of the tax exemptions is that on occasion the legislature has awarded specific exemptions for projects like the Goodrich Aerospace expansion in Burnsville 2 years ago, which was some of this basket of tax exemptions that the legislature used in that case to help them grow in the state. But those are more selective one-time tools.
So, Mr. Chair, just what I gather is that this does give you a little more to work with than you had in the past, mostly by geographical area more so than – I don't know if you're able to do the motor vehicle taxes with new businesses or any of that, or if that requires special legislation to do it if you decide – if we're negotiating.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Loftus.
Senator Kielash, the motor vehicle tax – has also been in the Jobs E program in Greater Minnesota. It's about 5% of the total, so it's a very small piece.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, for Mr. Jamboy, one of my questions that's similar to what Senator Torres Ray's question was is that you may not relocate a business, but if I'm starting a distribution business and purchasing brand-new trucks in a warehouse and getting all of those taxes written off and then going into competition with somebody in the same area, I have a significant competitive advantage over them because now I have new equipment, I have the taxpayers paying a good chunk of the investment back to me in these refund programs, and I'm kind of worried about current businesses having to compete with a new business that's not really adding anything new to the economy. It just the taxpayers are giving them a low-cost, competitive advantage at taxpayers' expense. So can you – I may be wrong on that, but that's what I'm looking for clarification on that.
Mr. Jamboy, I think that was for you.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Kielash, there's a couple competition, unfair competition, incentives to some, not incentives to others is always – something that people are concerned about, and very rightfully so. What I think is good about this particular bill that is different from many of the existing programs is that it asks the local applicant, the business, and the state of Minnesota to think about the impacts, and it's in, I think, subdivision 2 of section 1 that – think about the impacts that a profit business deal would have on existing businesses in the area. So the point being
We should not be unfairly assisting some business at the detriment of another business. This is the kind of the first time I've seen that language in a statute that was created for economic development. And then when you look at deeds criteria for how they go through the applications, you know, it talks about doing business in the area. Deed can add criteria if they deem necessary, so there is an opportunity if it looks like people are trying to take unfair competitive advantage on this program. They can add some competitive advantage criteria to the bill. So while competitive advantage is always a concern, and we always have to think about it, and that's a very good question, I think this bill is better than most in terms of not providing unfair competitive advantage to some business over the existing businesses.
Thank you, Mr. Jambo. I've got Senator Daley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator Senjum, for bringing this to our committee. And I would just say that focusing on private sector job creation and improving that environment is something that's very important to all of us, and it's a great conversation to have. Thank you.
Senator Daley moves that Senate file 1421.
Can I just offer a comment?
We'd love to have some more comments from you, Senator Senjum.
And I'll just go back to my city council days. And you know, a lot of us around the table, free market, free market, free market. But I will tell you, at least in my community, and I suspect that's true of a lot of communities across Minnesota, businesses come to our communities and look at them. And they might be looking at Peoria, they might be looking at Minot, they might be looking at Cedar Rapids, and they're asking, what kind of a deal do you have for us? And at least in my community, we could offer them maybe a little TIF, we could maybe offer them a place in an industrial park at a sort of artificially bought down property price, and that was it. And maybe we could even get a little bit of a grant from Deed to help out. But that was it. And we have good people and good ethics and you know in every community we'll say that and have that. But in the end, our community frankly wasn't able to compete with communities of other states. We didn't have the programs, we didn't have the ability to really be competitive. We had a few tools, but by and large, you know, those businesses moved on because it's free agency. And in a free agency environment, unless they're especially attracted to your community, you're going to lose them to another state that has a better deal. This is one little bill, which if we can work out and make work, will give us that additional piece of legislation in our toolbox that just might help us create some businesses. And I just, you know, just a pencil. If we have 100 profit businesses, you know, 10 employees making $27,000, that's $27 million. I don't know what the costs are, $300,000. I mean, we can make money on this. It's a profit plus. And so I hope you give us some consideration, or at least pass it on and give it another day in court somewhere.
Senator Daley moves the Senate File 1421 be recommended to pass, and this would go to the Tax Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed nay?
No.
Bill is, the motion is approved. So Senate File 1421, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator Senjum, for joining us this morning. Members, we have one more bill on our agenda this morning, and that is Senator Nelson, the senior member from Rochester, Senate File 1957. And if I could ask, I've got at least two folks slated to give some testimony this morning, so why don't you both join us at the table, Mr. Quillis and Ms. Howe from Deed. Senator Nelson, Senate File 1957, and members, this bill would then need to go to state government after we conclude our business. Senator Nelson.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'm glad to bring before you Senate File 1957, another jobs bill. And thank you, Senator Michelle and Senator Peterson, for co-authoring this with me. This bill actually looks at an issue that was brought to my attention in Rochester, and I know that many of you have heard this as well. You might remember when we visited a number of Southeast Minnesota and Rochester businesses, they talked about three things that were impacting their ability to grow and retain jobs. And it was very interesting to me. The first one they mentioned was regulatory burdens and permit issues. The second one they mentioned was a favorable tax climate, and the third issue was closing the skills gap in having a well-educated workforce. This bill addresses their first issue, which we've heard significantly across the state, which has to do with permitting. And Senate File 1957 provides that when there's a permit that goes between agencies, whether it be several state agencies or federal agencies, that permit be managed and coordinated by the state agency with primary jurisdiction in that permitting project. I would call this, in layman's terms, kind of like having a permit ombudsman. So when our folks seek a permit, they would have the agency with the largest primary jurisdiction take that permit and shepherd it through the process. And that's further defined in the bill as far as the developing timelines and coordinating the permits among agencies, and then providing the project proposer with those timelines, and then the primary agency that is tasked with shepherding this permit through the process would be the contact person for the proposer, a consumer-friendly addition there. And then probably the last one that I think will make the most difference, the last bullet point, is to make those permit applications and supporting documents available electronically in a centralized location for agencies involved in permitting the project. And what that would allow would allow for various agencies to be accessing the information and working on the permit simultaneously, instead of needing to go through one agency, then find out that it needs to go to another agency, determining another contact, getting it to that agency, then that agency looks at what's already been done and continues from there. This will allow for a much quicker permitting process. There is no fiscal note, and with that, I'll have Tony address the committee with his testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tony Quillis. I'm the Director of Environmental Policy for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Thank you for the time this afternoon to comment on Senate File 1957. Members, if you'll remember, I was here commenting on the chamber permitting bill as we went through. There was a provision very similar to this that dealt with environmental permits. And right now, Senator Nelson is expanding this to involve all permits. And we think it is a good idea if there is any way we can improve coordination and streamline the process to make it easier for project proposers, that folks that look to expand or start a new facility here in the state. We think anything, as Senator Metzen said, to keep on topic, to have another tool in the toolbox, we think is a good thing. Additionally, Mr. Chairman and members, I think Ms. Howe is going to reference where we have also been working with them and the administration's Minnesota Business First Stop to try and coordinate things like this, and I think she can elaborate a little bit farther on that, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Howe?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Kari Howe, and I work for DEED, and I'm the director of Minnesota Business First Stop. Minnesota Business First Stop is a multi-agency collaboration that involves the Department of Agriculture, the DNR, MnDOT, MPCA, IRRRB, and Commerce, with DEED as a lead agency. We're also involving DOLLI and the Department of Revenue. And it's built on the Green Enterprise Assistance Statute, which was passed a few years ago, as well as the executive order and the legislation on 150-day permitting. And what we do is to help businesses navigate multiple state agency resources to expedite their business development in the areas of finance, of permitting, of technical assistance, of feedstock in a lot of different areas if a company has multiple needs in order to expand and grow in the state. Indeed leads that effort, and we are staffed by all of those partner agencies on a team that I work with.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
And members, any questions? Mr. Kielash.
I guess I'm kind of wondering for the need for the legislation, since this looks like a management function and sounds like you're already doing it. So, I mean, is this just redundant legislation that's not really accomplishing anything? For the department, I guess, is what I intended it for. Sorry.
Ms. Hall.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Senator, thank you for asking that. I believe that we are working on that area. We meet on a regular basis with businesses, and we communicate regularly with the staff that I work with on how the projects are going, which includes the environmental permitting process, because when we work with a business directly and that's one of their needs, then certainly that's really a high priority for us.
Mr. Chair,
Ms. Hall,
I'm just, does this really, legislation really help that process, or is it the process is already in place from a management directive and this is just redundant legislation that's really not necessary?
Mr. Chair and yeah. Senator Kielash, I would say that we do have some concerns over this because we are working in that arena as we move forward. Our initiative is fairly new, and so, but that is our process in order to expedite permits, particularly in the environmental and as it relates to multiple resources that a business will need within the state and beyond. We're also fostering many partnerships throughout the state and networks, of course. Everyone who touches businesses are part of our network and our resource group. So,
yeah. Thank you.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Kielash for that question. I wondered that as well. I think, quite frankly, anything we can do to speed up the process in getting our permits for our business owners, that's a good thing. I noticed there's not a fiscal note on this, so that's not like there's any harm here. But quite frankly, this legislation is very important. If you look at line 1.23 and 1.24, I'm not sure if I think this is an important addition that I'm not clear if it's being covered elsewhere or not, and that's to make those permit applications and documents available electronically in a centralized location so that different agencies can access them at the same time instead of needing to take paperwork from one department, finish it up, get it over to the next department. So I think now if they're already doing that, that's great, but I think that's an important aspect is that we have that digital technology available and that we can access that.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Olson.
Jensen.
Mr. Chairman, members, there is a fiscal note, at least in my packet. It meets Senator Metzen's requirement that deed absorb cost.
Chairman, we got to get Jensen. Staff helping me here a little bit. I didn't see the fiscal note.
Thank you for that clarification. When I say there's no fiscal note, I mean there's a fiscal note, but there's no cost. So thanks for that.
Hey, thank you. Senator Nelson, this is, Mr. Chairman, we're a team on this one, aren't we? This saving
thank
money.
Thank you, Senator Metzen.
Members, other questions? Is there anyone from the audience that would like to testify? All right, Senator Nelson.
Mr. Chair, then I'd like to renew my motion that this pass and be recommended to pass and be sent to State Gov.
All right, members, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
So moved.
Thank you.
Members, I believe that finishes our business today. Thank you.
That was more of a field.